Joker.
I'm Donald Trump.
The real Joker. We saw the fucking Joker movie. And, as you can tell, I hated it.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Really sucked dick, man. I didn't think it was good at all. No, I loved it. I don't know if you loved it, but I loved it.
No, I'd say I loved it. It just, maybe not as much as you did, but I didn't paint my face.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like when I was painting this, I'm like, because you just kind of call me and like, yo, we want to do something about the Joker. I'm like, all right. And then I'm like, oh, I'm just going to throw this together.
Yeah.
And then as I'm doing it, I'm like, I feel more and more because maybe just because I'm fat and have this fucking beard hair, I'm feeling more and more like I'm looking like a juggalo. But
you know what, dude? It didn't cross my mind, which should be a good thing. But now that you've mentioned
now there's no escaping it, right?
Right. You would be fucking right.
I'ma be down. I'ma be down. Down with the clown till I'm dead in the ground.
Yeah.
Yep.
I did the full juggalo thing for Halloween once.
Cool.
I got a couple of Jekyll Brothers jerseys, me and my friend Waylon. And yeah. He was Shaggy and I was Violent J.
There's a lot of killer clowns in the popular culture, you know? ICP. Not that they're probably really killers, but...
Right. The killer clowns from outer space.
Right. I just watched a movie last night, Terrifier.
Oh, yeah. Terrifier.
And that was a sequel to some other movie, I think, called All Hallows Eve.
Yeah. What was that movie that I reviewed on Cinema for Cynics?
Clown. About
the Clown. Yeah.
The Cloyne.
The Cloyne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And It, of course. It. You can't forget that. Both iterations of It.
I kind
of
want to forget that.
Yeah.
At this point now, but that's just me.
Don't worry, Paul. Your favorite star, Bill Hader, saves the whole fucking thing. It's all good.
So you oh yeah, that's right. You went and saw that.
Yep. It sucked.
Well, I mean, it is another killer clown movie, though.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. And I mean, I'm sure we're barely even scratching the surface. Like, if there's that many, there's probably like fucking 50 or 60.
Oh, there's at least a billion clown movies. Yeah.
Because a lot of people are scared of clowns. You know. I don't really understand.
Coulrophobia, they call that.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's I don't really understand it. I mean, yeah, they're naturally kind of spooky. You can make them into a killer really easy because it's the juxtaposition of the happy thing they're supposed to represent
right.
with the violence. And
but I feel like at this point, the clown more represents violence than it does, like, all the happy shit, you know?
Certainly, like, at this point in popular culture and shit, yeah.
Yeah, the clown is no longer a symbol of mirth and joy.
Do people even get clowns for their kids, like, birthday parties and shit anymore?
I don't even know.
Is that even a thing?
I don't know.
Yeah. I haven't seen a legitimate clown in I don't know how long.
It's been a while. So anyway, let's talk about some of the aspects of this movie. So you and I both did Letterboxd reviews, which we'll link those down below.
Sure.
People can check those out and see our formal sort of written review kind of thing. And we took very different approaches to the movie in terms of how we perceived it and stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, the last paragraph, and really your whole review, but the last paragraph specifically of your review was kind of like, you know, don't try to look at this through the lens of, like, an allegory or, like, trying to compare it to the real world. Not necessarily don't, but don't get lost in that. Right,
right. Right. That was kind of the point of my whole review, I think.
Right.
Was to not get mired down in over-comparison between the world we live in and the world of the movie.
Right. And in my review, I get mired down in that, in exactly
sure.
that. So, I feel like there's a lot of stuff in this movie that is very directly comparable to stuff that's going on today, and also stuff that's really been going on off and on throughout the history of America and any country. You know, there's always been times of civil unrest. We see in this movie a city that's wrestling with enormous poverty. And, you know, obviously everyone knows about the tent cities and the destitution that exists in a lot of our major metropolitan cities at this point.
Right. Los Angeles being one of the
sleeping.
More...
Yeah.
I mean, Los Angeles is probably the most egregious,
right.
openly visible example of the homeless problem.
Oh, yeah.
There are places, you know, in near downtown L.A. where every... overpass is camped under.
Basically, yeah, it's somebody's roof.
Right there along the giant interstate, backed up with cars, just like literally sucking fumes all day underneath an overpass.
Yeah. And I mean things are bad. Dealing with some of the worst air pollution in the country, worst air quality.
You didn't really see that in this movie, though. The homeless problem was not really...
Yeah, you didn't see any, like, allusions to tent cities, but you definitely got...
It was the lower economic scale that was really examined in this movie. The bottom rung, the people that are just barely living paycheck to paycheck.
Like people who are just above the rung of homelessness, where they have some kind of roof over their head, but they're living in shitty, terrible, dilapidated apartments. They're chronically underemployed,
certainly under the constant
miserable existences, you know, bereft of any sort of joy or hope or any of the stuff that, you know, you'd associate with having a good life of any kind of quality. So I think that there's definitely, it taps into poverty, which, I mean, really, if you think about it, is kind of unique for, I mean, American cinema to do. You don't see a lot of movies, especially big blockbuster movies, where the main character is impoverished.
Right.
You know, usually you see characters living in ridiculously high standard of living. Like even on the show like Friends back in the day, there are a bunch of single people living in New York, but they have like these giant, beautifully furnished apartments, even though they're supposedly broke and shit.
Right. Yeah, they're constantly having struggles while living in downtown New York in a 1,200 square foot studio apartment.
Right.
And it makes absolutely no sense.
That mentality, I think, has kind of carried out onto like popular culture and stuff. And you don't really see, like, I feel like back in the 70s and maybe the 80s too, you saw a lot of that gritty sort of this is the underbelly of society kind of stuff.
Sure. But
you don't really see that too much in movies these days.
It has become increasingly rare, for sure.
Kind of interesting to see that, especially in a big blockbuster like this, which obviously this movie does not feel like a big blockbuster at all. It really feels like something that if you didn't have the Joker in it, you couldn't convince most Americans to see. But
right, yeah, it definitely does. It's not a giant spectacle film like you've come to expect from the kind of comic book genre.
Right.
It's a quieter, kind of like art house type of film. I mean, it's got its sweeping moments and it's beautifully shot, which
is... Oh, yeah, yeah.
But...
And can you believe, by the way, just taking a moment to huge props to Todd Phillips, the director of this movie, because prior to this, his resume would not have led me to believe he was capable of making this sort of film.
Right, yeah. This
coming from the Hangover franchise, it's like, how do you go from that to this? It's like, you went from, I mean, I don't know, I like the first Hangover movie, the two sequels were awful, but man, this is just such a fucking step up from that kind of shit.
Right.
So, congratulations. You've graduated, sir.
Yeah, hopefully he can keep up the pace, and hopefully, like, Warner Brothers sees the opportunity here to actually establish something like a DC cinematic universe that makes sense, and that's different.
Yeah, and that draws a sharp, sharp distinction between what it is and what Marvel's offering us.
So Marvel's offering this spangly, super clean, super high-energy action shit, and we're doing this darker, grittier, more socially relevant examination of the lower end of society, and we're shooting it different, and we're making these moments pop more. Because, like, that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was there was remarkably little violence in this film, I feel.
It was, when it was done as, like, a punctuation
mark. It was super impactful because it wasn't a constant explosion fest.
And it was a realistic violence, too.
Right.
It wasn't, like, superhero, like, dun-da-dun, dun-da-dun, you know, it wasn't that stupid shit. Not that I have a problem with that shit.
No.
I mean, I've gotten into it, but, like, this is very visceral, gritty, intense violence that really strikes you as being very realistic.
Right.
Very bloody.
Gory.
Not clean. Not something where it's like, you know, someone gets up and, oh, I'm fine. It's like, you know, people are, you know, there's gallons of blood. But, you know, it's not, like you said, there's probably three or four big violent moments in the entire movie. There's, let's see, there's the, spoilers, by the way. There's the attack on the subway.
Right.
There's the moment when he kills that asshole from his job that got him fired.
Right, that's towards the end already.
Right, and then there's the big
Murray scene
at the end. And, you know, that's kind
of... And then the orgy of violence that kind of ensues at the very end.
Encapsulates the city. And I can't remember another instance of, violence being depicted overtly on the screen in the movie.
So,
which is strange because there's so many people out there acting like this is one of the most violent movies out there. But really, not much of the screen time is devoted to violence. I will admit, though, the violence that you do get is ultra impactful and visceral and shocking when it happens.
Likely as a result of the fact that it's not overused.
Right. And also just, I mean, the way it's shot is just fucking so brutal. This is not a particularly violent film. You've probably seen 100 more violent films this year. You know, like, I find it funny that people are like, oh, this promotes gun violence. Oh, this is a violent movie. But, like, then John Wick is, like, the biggest hit of the fucking year and shit.
Right.
People did Keanu Reeves kill in the John Wick movies by now?
Right.
Like, he's basically a one-man walking genocide at this point. But we're worried about the dude in makeup in a movie who killed, let's see, how many people? Like, seven?
Three.
Six? Something like that?
He kills three, four, he kills five people in the movie. Directly.
Right. So, I mean, that's not even up to snuff with, like, the mass shootings we have nowadays.
Right.
And not to say that he's not a violent character. Obviously, he's a violent character, but... You know, the idea that this movie is overladen with violence and it's just an orgy of violence that's been propagated in the media, totally fucking false.
Just not true.
So, getting back to the whole, like, comparing this to the real world thing, I feel like Thomas Wayne in the movie, pretty small role. All the roles besides Joaquin are pretty small.
Yeah.
I felt like he was a sort of a metaphor for a Donald Trump-esque kind of figure. I feel like, you know, he's more articulate, but he kind of, you know, is not... He's not afraid to go on the air and say that poor people are clowns, you know, or some shit.
Right.
He doesn't have that filter. He's a little bit... He's way more articulate than Trump. But, like, it's, you know, a rich billionaire that acts like he's going to come and save the city from itself. He's kind of like, they made him kind of fucking pudgy and shit. You know, every other depiction I've ever seen of Thomas Wayne, he's been a, you know, reasonably physically fit guy. This one, they kind of make him a big fat dude.
So it's interesting that you bring this up, because I didn't think about Donald Trump one time during the watching of this movie, or one time during my collecting of my thoughts to write a review.
Right.
I just never saw that comparison made.
Yeah.
And I think that's something about this movie that it seems to at least inspire different perspectives from different people.
It's because it doesn't give you easy answers to everything.
Right.
So there's just, you're going to have as many different interpretations of this movie as you have people going to see this movie.
Right.
I mean, you know, even the fucking idiots that, I heard when we're walking out of the movie theater, there was some dude, was like, or was it a chick? It was you that heard it, not me. They were like, well, that was disturbing. Like, they were shocked or something. Like, I don't know, man. I mean, this movie, the trailers look disturbing. The press coverage has been that of, like, this movie's scary. There's police stationed at the movie theater letting their presence be known, lest some crazy incel shoots up the fucking movie theater. Like, how did you not... Was there not enough hints that this was not going to be a family-friendly affair, for fuck's sake?
That was the most disturbing thing about this movie to me, was just the
society's reaction to it.
Fucking police presence at a place that you don't ever want to associate with fucking police. Just that false kind of feeling of security that people want made me fucking sick, dude. I hated seeing those stupid fucking cops.
I don't know. I feel like, in a way, and I think you said it in your review, it kind of added to the ambiance of the movie-going experience. Like,
I mean,
it almost kind of made it, put it in your head like, whoa.
There's nothing like it in my entire history of going to the fucking movies.
This movie is dangerous for some reason.
Like, I've never been to a movie theater where there's, like, police cruisers all over the place and two cops literally stationed there. Those dudes looked at everybody walking in there. They were just sitting there kind of scanning the crowd, waiting for a gun to come out. It just felt, it was like a sickening feeling.
There was like signs that said like, basically, if I try to show up dressed like this, I wouldn't have been allowed in.
Yeah. The no makeup policy was in effect because...
Don't be a fan of something.
Right.
You know, like, what the fuck?
I'm sure if you came dressed as fucking Tony Stark, they'd, you know, kick you out of the Avengers,
right? Oh, yeah, I'm sure, you know?
But absolutely. This is just... I don't even understand, dude. The cops being there was really... Like, it is one of those... It's one of the more memorable times I've been to the movies.
The only thing I can kind of compare it to, not the same, but a different sort of way... Was the only thing, like, it takes a powerful movie, whether I like the movie or not, to kind of change the very nature of the movie going experience. And the only other movie I can think of, at least in recent times, that's done that has been Black Panther.
Right.
Where you saw, like, lots of, like, black families wearing, like, when we went to the theater, that, it was like they were wearing dashikis and traditional African clothing. Like, this is a movie of, like, this movie is, like, a point of pride for us, you know?
Right.
And this movie is obviously in a very different direction where it's like almost like you feel like they'd prevent you from seeing it if they could, you know?
Right. And look
like
at
they're scared of the movie.
Look at what the and this is what kind of something I didn't remark about in my review, but that I thought about was look at the angle that's being taken by the people that fear this movie. So the Joker's already an established character.
Right.
And in most every fucking universe I've ever seen him placed in, he's a mass murderer. He's a mass killer of people. He's a mass mayhem and destruction causer, right?
Right.
People are afraid because this movie provides context for it.
Right.
They're not
scared of the mass murdering psychopath.
They're scared of the psychological examination of him.
They're scared of him being humanized and seeing that, hey, wait, there's actually ways in which any person watching this that has ever gone through struggle in their life
can
relate to
this
person and
right.
empathize with him.
Right.
And that's what they're scared of.
Right.
Let's be real.
And that, to me, is the opposite of progress, especially now, at a time where, like, this mass murder thing is part of our weekly news cycle.
Right. And think about the level of examination we're invited by mainstream media to do about these mass shooters. It's like when there was the serial killer phenomenon happening in this country. Yeah, a lot of the stuff that came out about the serial killers and stuff was very exploitative, and you know, salacious. But at least society in general had an examination of these figures. There was a curiosity, an intellectual curiosity in people's minds that the media was happy to stoke about, like, what motivates people to do this? Let's get in the heads of these people. And we've seen so many movies that get in the heads of a serial killer, so many movies or TV shows where you spend time with criminal profilers trying to figure out the psyche of the serial killer. But we've not had any fucking equivalent things in media, be it fictional media like movies or whatever, or be it actual media coverage that invites us into the headspace of the mass shooter. So this is kind of the first movie to try it. I don't know if you could necessarily call it a mass shooter.
No, that's not true. There's Elephant, the Gus Van Sant film that's basically kind of...
But how many people have seen it? You know what I mean?
Right, not many. And it's not like it hasn't been done, but the fact that... honestly, the fact that this is what people are scared of, understanding that person, which I think is key to understanding why these shootings are happening and how to stop them, it's fundamentally unscientific to not want to delve into the mindset of these types of characters. And to be afraid of it, I just think is beside the point. The mass slaughter is not what scares you. It's the actual frank look that justifies, not necessarily the killings that he does. I don't feel like this movie tried to justify what the main character was doing.
I think
anyway.
It just tried to explain it.
Right. Tried to provide context for it.
Right.
Here's how he slipped from being a relatively low-end, productive member of society to being somebody that has killed people.
And not only that, but has made himself a symbol of carnage and mayhem and who looks at a burning city and says, it's beautiful, you know?
Right.
Like, how do you get from a fairly timid, you know, man with a lot of fucking problems to that. And this movie, I think, provides a pretty realistic portal into exactly how that happens, to the point where you understand every step of the way why he's doing what he's doing. You know, you get a picture, you get a window into his mental illness, you get a window into the ways in which a confluence of societal factors have driven him to become this person that he becomes.
Right.
And you know what the thing is? Like, a lot of that, whether you analogize this movie to society or not, or to whatever extent you do, you know, a lot of the explanations, because the world we're looking at is so rooted and grounded in reality, I feel like those explanations all exist to explain a lot of violent, aberrant sort of criminal behavior that we have in society. And instead of, you know, feeling like, oh, we got to get rid of these problems in our society, people are watching this movie and saying, we got to get rid of this movie. It's like, no, that's just reflecting real shit. Like, you want to keep the horrible dystopian nightmare we live in, but you want to get rid of the movie that's telling you the fucking truth about it?
Of course. That's all. Well,
killing the messenger much, motherfucker.
Speaking truth to power has always been the ultimate fucking sin in civilization. And it always probably will be, as long as the power structure remains so fucking lopsided towards the top. And this is a reflection of that. And I really didn't feel fear in any of the people that went to see this movie.
No.
Those cops were there because CNN spun a fucking narrative out of
this. Yeah, who's really scared of this movie? Let's take a look. The media is scared of this movie. They've printed article after article after article, you know, condemning it, saying it empathizes too much with a killer and all this other stuff, and it's going to inspire copycats and all these things. The media's driven fear of it. And the Law and Order sort of crowd obviously is scared of it. The U.S. Army released some shit about, oh, it's dangerous. The cops are there in full force. Everyone, I mean, I've seen people all over the internet talking about how their screening was just littered with cops. I heard someone say there was fucking four cop cars at their goddamn movie theater and like an army of cops there. Just there, waiting for some shit to fucking jump off.
There were four cop cars parked in the parking lot of our movie theater.
Yep.
Two visible police officers sitting on bar stools in the lobby, scanning the whole fucking place and looking at everybody that came in.
And I bet you bet your ass there was a fucking plainclothes fucking officer somewhere in that goddamn movie theater.
Oh, absolutely there was. Absolutely there was more police presence than was implied by the people that were visible. And who was scared? Who among those, like, was there an aura of fear?
No.
In that audience? Beyond the fact that it was weird having
honestly,
the cops around.
I obviously can't look into the minds of the people around me, but I feel like the audience was really rapt with attention throughout that fucking film.
Not only that, not that I, you know, condone or don't condone this, but there was a dude sitting one row in front of us that had like a little kid that looked like he was 6 or 7.
Yeah. I think that kid was a little young for the movie, but whatever. My dad took me to fucking see Seven when I was probably like, you know, I wasn't even a fucking 10 yet or whatever. Yeah, I don't know what year that came out.
But I wasn't denied access to the bad movies either, and I think I turned out okay. but anyway, that's not the point. The point is, somebody that's afraid that some fucking crazy, pimply white dude is going to shoot the place up because he's mad because he can't get laid,
right,
isn't going to bring their fucking
kid. Probably doesn't
kid.
Bring their
there
kid.
Was just no aura of fear in that audience. There was no... We went and ate at a place that, like, serves you dinner while you watch the movie.
Right.
People were ordering hamburgers and shit. Like, you don't order a big plate of fucking cheesy fries on a night you're afraid you might get shot. So the fucking cops have got to be there, though. You know what I mean? It's absurd. I haven't seen a lick of genuine fear anywhere online that isn't attached to some fucking corporate interest.
Right.
Or some law enforcement
entity. I think people should contemplate, like, why is that? Like, why is the establishment so afraid of this movie? You know, there was huge resistance at Warner Brothers for even making this fucking film. You know, they basically had to fight, you know, tooth and nail to even get this fucking thing made. Joaquin Phoenix in that interview was famously asked, like, well, what do you think about if it inspires real violence? And he walked out. I guess they eventually coaxed him back. I don't think he should have come back.
No, he should.
I think he should have been like, fuck you.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous to ask somebody that made a movie, especially in this fucking current day and age where like, death is on sale at the movies now.
Right.
Action is the number one fucking genre right now. People are getting blown to bits left and fucking right, but for some reason, this movie's under the microscope with a whopping 5 murders. I don't understand. I mean, I guess more people might die over the course of the ensuing carnage at the
right.
end.
Right. We see Thomas and Martha Wayne get right. shot at the end by a Joker sort of sycophant.
Right. They're just one of the rioters.
Right. See,
there's something that you brought up about the realistic look, and I thought that there was a lot of, like, fantasy in this movie, because right. let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Are there people in this country that fit the profile of Arthur Fleck? Absolutely. Underemployed, mentally ill, no access to good services, over-medicated, all of the shit that's explored in his right. character development. Do those people exist? Yes.
Yeah.
That's where it stops, though. Most people just exist mired in that same kind of cyclical hell of in-between jobs and sick mom he's trying to take care of. They get no political clout. They get no giant uprising right. of people using them as a moniker. And if they kill 3 people on the subway, they're in jail within hours.
Right.
And in the system for the rest of their lives.
Well, I think...
So it's
think
not a realistic look at... what those types of people typically get.
No, I mean, it's definitely not that. What I'm saying is, I think that if you have the right confluence of factors, you can do that. I don't think anything in the movie was impossible, either physically or psychologically or group psychologically. It takes a lot of happenstance. It takes a lot of things falling just into the right, or in this case, maybe the wrong place. But I think that there is a grounding in reality. And if you remember, he was obviously the prime suspect for those fucking subway murders. The cops were looking deeply.
They were all over him like stink on shit.
Right. So, I mean, like, it wasn't like he wasn't going to get away with it. If right. nothing else had happened in that intervening time, there's a lot of stuff that had to happen a certain way. Like, he had to fucking do that fucking stand-up comedy performance that someone happened to have a film of. That someone happened to get to Murray Franklin, the Robert De Niro character, that happened to catch on with the crowd and generate enough buzz that they want to bring him on the show to humiliate him further.
Well,
and that all had to happen before the police caught him, which very nearly didn't happen. Like, there were so many places where if, like, the dark gods of fortune weren't on his side, it wouldn't have played out the way it did. But I think that they gave you obviously, you have to believe in a lot of fucking happenstance, because, like, you're right. No, you know, the typical person like Arthur Fleck, like, his story could have ended in 1,000 equally tragic but less interesting ways.
I think we're talking about
along the way.
I think we're talking about what's at the heart of, like, all these pearl clutchers' fears about this movie. Is they're saying that because of all this, as you call it, happenstance that happens, it kind of glorifies this dude. And it glorifies the idea that, hey, because I'm sad and lonely, I can go shoot a bunch of fucking people.
Right.
And it turns out great for me. I got this army of sycophants. And
how come those people don't complain when John Wick kills, you know, 80 people
or Rambo,
his fucking dog, you know?
Rambo yeah. lobs a fucking Molotov into a bus full of fucking people. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, why,
you know, like,
why is that?
How come we can endlessly glorify violence, but then in this instance, uh-oh, we don't like this? Because, once again, I think it's just that humanizing context we talked about earlier.
Well, I hate to fucking invoke Derek Jensen again, but one of my favorite philosophers, Derek Jensen, talks about how violence is only allowed to flow in one way on the hierarchy. And I think that that's why people justify violence in a thing like John Wick. Because he's the good guy.
Right.
And he's taken out the bad guys that killed his puppy and whatnot. Right? Rambo, with the exception of the First Blood movie, is always, you know, on the side of, you know, the righteous. So that type of violence is okay, but when violence comes from someone at the very bottom of that hierarchy and goes up, especially as high as it goes up in this movie.
Right. Kills Thomas, the most popular entertainer in Gotham.
Right.
He doesn't directly kill Thomas Martha Wayne, but, you know,
his actions
directly lead to their death.
Sure.
You know, his first victims in the movie that kind of ignite this social movement of people wearing clown masks in the
street. Wall Street guys.
Right. He kills a bunch of, you know, Wall Street dudes. Not technically Wall Street because it's Gotham and not New York, but, you know, whatever the Gotham equivalent of Wall Street is, he kills those dudes.
Right.
And they work for Thomas Wayne, and they're these, you know, the suits and shit, and, you know, the high-powered douchebags, you know? And he slaughters them in the subway. After, I mean, kind of starts off in a self-defense kind of way, but then it goes much further than self-defense.
I think there might be an answer in that hierarchy model as to why the powers that be seem to be so intent on being afraid of this film.
Right, because it's all about, hey, what if the underclass rises up against you?
Right.
And they even make it where he's not even overtly being political with it. Like, it wasn't... He didn't target rich people. His first three victims happened to be rich, and that's what ignited the social movement. And
right.
then, you know, his next victim happened to be the fucking the guy who had mocked him, this Murray Franklin, played by Robert De Niro, who's this big entertainer in Gotham City who does a live late-night talk show. And, you know, I think you could probably imagine what happens, but things turn bloody on live TV. You know, so I mean, obviously he's happens to target a lot of people that are above his social status because of just bitterness and stuff. It's not even necessarily political. It's not even necessarily like he wants to change this society or anything. He just wants to hurt it. He just wants to lash out at it. And I think that obviously there's a lot of people who are motivated by similar fucking, you know, things out there. You know, if you've read any of these manifestos of these killers that, you know, most of them don't end up writing a manifesto, but a lot of them do. And it's usually a lot of, like, bitterness over the wrongs, the indignities of their lives, you know, like the Elliot Rodgers manifesto or the, what was the other one that wrote a manifesto?
It
escapes me at the moment. But, yeah, I mean, a few of these
guys.
There's
been too many.
Yeah.
There's been too many of these dudes for me. I don't have the catalog big enough. Isn't that the kind of the tragedy here? Is that we have this big showing of police power, this big media circus surrounding something that is totally innocuous as a film. I mean, movies have been way more violent than this movie is, and have had no police presence other than the off-duty pot-bellied officer sitting there sucking down a bucket of popcorn with the rest of us and enjoying the fuck out of it. Which is what those two dumbass flatfoots that sat out in our fucking lobby should have been doing. They should have been out of that fucking uniform, in their flip-flops and sandals and shit like I am right now, watching a movie and eating some goddamn popcorn. And instead, there's all this fear.
They're watching us like hawks. Because who knows? Who knows what dastardly deeds the theater goers might get up to, inspired
right.
by this fucking, this film. There's not even like an anti, there's not even an anti-cop message, I guess. There is one attack on a cop, but it's basically, you know,
there's tons
attack
of
attack on the social order.
There's tons of people that want to paint their messages onto this movie, though. I've seen a lot of speculation. When literally it comes straight from the lips of the main character. I don't believe in anything.
Right.
He's not.
He overtly states. And the Joker, I think, inherently, one of the few parameters for the Joker is that he has to be sort of an inherently nihilistic and self-absorbed
right.
character. I don't think that you can have a Joker with a social conscience of any kind.
No.
Now, obviously, they kind of got close to that, but it really came about less. Like, his big speech at the end, you know, I feel like that was more about him airing his personal grievances with how he particularly had been mistreated because of, you know, obviously he's a narcissist in the film as well as a sociopath.
That's something that I wanted to bring up, too. When he was given the platform on the Murray show before
right.
the carnage ensues, he chooses to speak about a couple of things. One of them is comedy and the inherently kind of subjective nature of comedy and thus kind of the censorship of it.
Well, he was kind of, yeah, and I think he was likening the subjective nature of comedy with the subjective nature of morality.
Right.
Which I think is also kind of central to the Joker character.
But the other thing that he chooses to use to fill that time is to talk about rudeness. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like, and that's not aimed at the rich or the poor or the middle class or the upper middle class.
That's raised, he's basically just saying like, that's the sewage in which we fucking swim every day of our fucking lives in this culture.
You know, he's concerned with how we treat one another.
Yeah, which kind of seemed like a strange sentiment for a Joker archetype, but I think the movie kind of laid a pretty decent foundation for it.
He's horribly mistreated throughout the whole movie by pretty much everybody that has any sort of power over him. His mother, his boss, the police, just everybody. Anybody that has any sort of social status above him, these Wall Street dickheads that just fuck with him for no reason on the fucking subway.
Yeah, after sexually harassing a woman on the subway.
Right. So he's constantly abused by everyone around him, and I think that that's something that I haven't heard a whole lot of people talking about when it comes to this movie. In that big, you know, ending scene where he finally gets to give us a reason for this in his own words, he talks at length about rudeness and how shittily we treat one another and how we're always just yelling at one another. And once again, makes me question why this is seen as a fucking dangerous film.
Yeah, because...
Nice is now a fucking dangerous message.
In my review, my ending paragraph was basically, you know, I think the real message of this film is be kind to people, be compassionate, you know, don't shit on people just because they're beneath you in some way, you know, on the social hierarchical ladder or whatever the fuck. Because if you're not, one day maybe they'll kill you, and maybe you'll kind of fucking deserve it. You know? Maybe that's the part that, maybe that is a discomfort to people, the idea that, you know, maybe they played some part in the creation of the killer that eventually takes their lives. You know, because then, you're trying to put it on us, you're victim blaming. Well, maybe the victims do deserve some fucking blame sometimes. Sorry.
Oh, that's edgy, TJ. You can say that, though, because you're wearing Joker makeup.
Right. That's just the character talking.
Right. I don't necessarily think direct victims of violence should suffer any blame, but society as a whole has got a big finger pointed at it.
Well, if we're all implicated in that, then, you know, any individual person, to some extent, would have to shoulder at least a smidgen of the fucking responsibility. And, you know, obviously... the reason that I think that there's no way to really perceive the Joker as the hero of this movie is because he responds to the cruelty of the world by becoming more cruel. He responds to the abuse that's been laid at his feet by abusing others around him. You know, so really, at the end, it's almost like he's kind of given up. And he said, you know what, if I'm going to live in a fucking society that's this fucked up, then I'm going to be the most fucked up person of all in this society. I'm going to show you violence and depravity on a scale you can't fucking even imagine.
I don't think he's portrayed as the hero in the movie because he doesn't necessarily win. I mean, the end of the movie shows him locked in an asylum again. Now, there is a little allusion to him escaping from that asylum, but the power structure hasn't changed. You know, all that chaos out in the city didn't tear down the fucking psych ward.
Nope.
You know what I mean? So life goes on, and his struggle has not been
a successful
one.
At the end of the day, probably all that we got, all that the mob got out of it was some stolen loot and some smashed up cars and some further damaged infrastructure.
Right.
Basically, you know, they made their society worse.
Which has happened before.
Oh, yeah, and it does happen.
By the way, I mean, the riots in the 90s, the Rodney King riots.
Oh, yeah.
They...
Let's destroy our own living space because we're just so fucking frustrated.
And so there's definitely analogs to the real world there. But he doesn't win in this movie. He's a mental patient at best. And at worst, a horribly suffering, mentally ill person, unmedicated... wandering the streets in delusion. I don't know how that's a fucking hero in any stripe, you know, like, come at me with an angle that that's a heroic person.
I think that there's, I think there's a part of everybody, or maybe not everybody, but at least a part of me that can see the hero angle to, on some sort of emotional level. Because, I mean, there was, like, when you see him as the Joker, there's definitely, because you empathize with him, there's definitely, like, you feel the catharsis of that moment. And, like, yeah, he's finally getting his revenge on society. But, like, what does that revenge really amount to? It doesn't make things better for him,
for
anybody.
It probably makes things worse.
Yeah.
I mean, if this is meant to be kind of an early look at Gotham City, we know that it just becomes a giant crime-riddled, violence-riddled, gang-riddled nightmare.
Right.
To the point where Batman has to be born to fight the fucking shit. So we know that there's nothing good in the future. He hasn't sowed the seed of social change, which is why all the people that are trying to ascribe their own little, ideologies to this. It's like Occupy Wall Street. It's definitely an anti-rich person movie. No.
It's Antifa. It's this.
Yeah,
it's
Antifa. It's whatever little protest group that you want to see in it. That's why I was trying to caution people in my review to allowing that bland, uninteresting shit to paint something onto what's already established in our minds. The city of Gotham is what this is about. It's not necessarily about New York City or Los Angeles,
right,
or any of the protest movements that exist. And I think to over prescribe that shit to this movie is to miss a huge slice of the point.
Right, to try to make direct analogs, like this is this and this is that. It's like, it's a little bit more generalized is what you're saying.
Right, which is why I think I didn't think Donald Trump, and maybe right, you did. This movie is just like the character of the Joker is. It's a blank slate. It invites conversations like these where people see it from different perspectives. And that's really, I think, the joy of the movie for me was thinking about it and then reading what others thought about it. It's the people that are, like, once again, trying to overprescribe reality to it that I think are utterly missing the point of the film.
Yeah. So you and I don't really give a shit about awards and things of that nature for films like the Oscars or anything like that, but... that being said, Joaquin Phoenix in this movie, I mean, just like, holy shit, dude.
I mean, he's one of those actors that just can do no wrong in my eyes.
Right, and in this movie in particular, I mean, like, he literally carries every fucking minute of the runtime of this film. I honestly forgot about Joaquin Phoenix as a fucking entity.
Oh,
watching
yeah,
this movie, you know, it's pretty rare that someone can totally and completely, especially someone with a recognizable face and a recognizable name. Like, I've never seen Schwarzenegger or something, you know, I know we keep mentioning John Wick, but I don't look at John Wick and I see Keanu Reeves always, you know?
Of course.
I see Arnold Schwarzenegger always in
a
movie.
It's one of those elevated roles.
I lost Joaquin Phoenix in the role.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody could watch that movie and be thinking Joaquin Phoenix for longer than a minute or two. It really is a masterful performance, but I'm used to that from him.
Right.
I think he just kind of churns that out. It lent a lot of credibility to me that he was selected for this role.
Do you think that this is his best performance? Or do you think there's a better one out there?
The only performance that I would put up against his performance in this one is his turn in The Master.
Which I haven't seen that.
I don't know why you haven't seen that movie, TJ.
Yeah, I'll have to get to that.
It's a similar kind of role. Dude on the very low end of the economic scale gets wrapped up in things that, you know, he doesn't really understand. But I think it's a similarly transformative kind of role. So I'd say it's the only one that I would put on the same plane as this one. It's definitely some of his best work, for sure.
So where do you think Joaquin's portrayal fits into the history of cinematic depictions of the Joker?
It's an interesting one because, well, like pretty much every reimagining of the Joker, it's utterly different than everything that came before.
Right.
And the character really supports that, I think. It's a character that can kind of absorb any type of background, any kind of tone.
Right. And the Joker, I mean, has been everything from totally silly, sort of very campy villain like he was in the old Adam West show and the movie, the Batman the movie,
right,
from 1966, I think. You know, he's
so the kind of crime boss, flamboyant gangster Joker in the first.
Yep, Jack Nicholson's portrayal.
Right.
Kind of a more Scarface Joker in the Jared Leto one, which I still, I'm sorry, Jared, but I don't think that worked, man.
No.
Didn't work for me anyway. Heath Ledger, sort of the anarchist punk rock Joker. You know, if I was going to use some adjectives for Joaquin's Joker, it's almost like the sad Joker.
Yeah, man. I mean, this movie really drives home how emaciated he is. I mean, you get these long sweeping shots of his rib cage, and I mean, he's the Joker, like the Heath Ledger Joker was really physically capable. You know what I mean? A badass in a stand up fight.
Yeah.
And this is not that kind of Joker. Without the gun that he's given by an altruistic friend, or maybe not so altruistic friend, he's nothing. He wouldn't have been able to defend himself against those fucking Wall Street guys, and he would just absorbed another beatdown like he did at the beginning of the film.
Yep.
So this is a Joker that the power that he projects is way more in the social movement that springs up around his actions, rather than his direct involvement in it.
Right. You couldn't see this iteration of the Joker going toe-to-toe with Batman in a fistfight.
No, not at this point in the character's development. Now, maybe he...
Maybe down the line, you know.
But, yeah, no, he's definitely not physically capable. I mean, a bunch of fucking kids kicked the shit out of him in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Right.
So, he's not portrayed as any kind of physical threat to anybody other than his ability to grab a gun.
Yeah. So, to me, this performance and the Ledger performance, I don't know which one I like better because they're so different, but both of those actors, I feel like, just embodied the shit out of their interpretations of the character. Now, obviously, Joaquin had much, much more screen time to play with.
Oh, yeah.
So that's definitely an advantage.
Nobody's ever had...
No.
This... Well, I guess maybe other than...
Mark Hamill.
Yeah, Mark Hamill over the course of the animated series.
Right.
But it's very rare for an actor to be given this much time to develop this character.
Absolutely.
But that being said, I don't know, man. I think I'm more apt to sympathize with Joaquin's Joker than Ledger's Joker. But that also might be because it's been so many years and I've seen it so many times and this is fresh and that isn't.
Yeah.
That's why it's always so hard for me to kind of...
Yeah, I understand.
Pit these characters against one another.
I still haven't made a determination. I don't know if I ever will. I mean, I think in my mind, kind of right now, they're tied. But definitely, they're pretty fucking equal caliber. I mean, and, you know, Heath Ledger won the Oscar posthumously for that role. I'd be very surprised if anybody but Joaquin Phoenix won the Oscar for Best Actor.
I don't think I'll be surprised.
Because
the Academy is just, it's a piece of shit now.
Right. I mean, it's a total piece of shit, but I don't know.
And they might bow to social pressure, and because they're part of this, you know, media conglomerate shit,
right,
they might bow to that overarching fear.
I think they would be...
Not put it...
It would, I mean, like, the Oscars has already obviously been, it's lost legitimacy several times by now, but... Man, if they don't acknowledge this performance, like, seriously, fuck them.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing I just want to maybe talk about a few, like, key scenes that really resonated.
Sure.
So, I really love the dance numbers in this movie. I loved that the Joker kind of expressed himself often through dance.
And pantomime as well.
Yeah, and probably my two favorites were immediately after he kills the Wall Street cocksuckers, he locks himself in a bathroom, and he seems really distressed, and you think for a second that he's going to, like, you know, he's going to have, like, the typical emotional kind of breakdown scene where he, like, punches mirrors or breaks something or... you know, collapses into the fetal position and cries, but instead he does this very slow, deliberate dance, like interpretive dance scene.
Yeah.
Which it just felt like he was inviting something like dark and horrible into himself. Like it was almost like I felt like in that moment I was seeing like the Joker kind of beginning to be born. I don't think he's fully born until the last 30 minutes of the movie, but I think that in that moment, like, that enters into him. Even more than the killing scene, I feel like this was the moment where he's being established as, like, okay, this is the Joker.
Right.
And he also kind of expresses, I feel like, when he finally fully embraces the Joker persona, he does this really cool dance scene on the stairs. It's been kind of showed a little bit in the trailers and stuff. And,
I didn't like the choice of soundtrack for that.
Yeah?
They used that fucking song that they play at hockey games and shit. Hey! I was just kind of like, I don't know. It was the only kind of soundtrack element in this movie that felt out of place. And I think they could have chosen any number of, I don't really know what.
I don't know. I mean, but, I didn't really bother me. I could see why maybe it is an unusual choice intellectually, but it didn't really bother me at the moment.
It just summoned up, like, memories of plastic cups of, like, $5.50 beer at a sweaty, hot, late-night fucking
AAA
baseball game or some shit. I don't know. It just didn't seem like a piece of music that he would groove to, but whatever. I had a lot of little minor quibbles about the movie, but all of them are completely overshadowed by the... the finished product of the film.
I think the climax of the movie, the big climactic moment where he goes on the Murray Franklinton show,
right,
and is interviewed by Murray, and then ends with probably the darkest joke in goddamn history. I don't know, that was a huge... I don't know, man, I felt like a surge go through that whole fucking theater full of people at that moment, because it was just like, fuck! It was so... You know, you knew something was going to jump off in the fucking scene, so there was like a huge amount of tension just waiting for it to happen, but when
they kind of teased
Yeah, they really teased that he was coming on to kill himself.
Right.
Which, I mean, I knew that wasn't going to happen.
Right, of course.
Because that just wouldn't, you know, that's not the Joker. But that willingness, and he even has the, oh man, it was so fucking brilliant how they did it, where he looks at that joke in his joke book, where he's like, I hope my death makes more sense, spelled with a, you know, as the denomination,
right,
than my life. And he kind of looks at that, and he's like, is this my big suicide moment? And then he's looking at it and he's like, you know, that's not even what I want to do. I want to turn my anger outwards.
Right.
And fucking make an even more bold and profound fucking statement. And so that big moment of just fucking shooting Robert De Niro's character, Murray, in the head, it was probably one of the most violent sort of shootings I've seen in a movie, just because of like the sheer like speed and the way when you're shot in real life, you don't fly back, you know,
right.
A bullet doesn't do that, you just crumple, but you, in movies you see people fly back. This one was like, if anything in this movie was totally unrealistic, it was the violence of that execution, where, you know, De Niro just practically flies fucking across the goddamn studio.
Right.
He doesn't leave his chair, but just the sudden, like, he's like,
it's like this giant gouge of blood.
Spray of blood, just a huge geyser. Just,
that's a recurring theme in this movie. At least a couple of times, there's just this huge splatter of blood against the wall.
Yep.
And my girlfriend pointed out after the fact that the blood was very stylized in this movie. It had a glittery look to it. It wasn't thick and syrupy and dark like blood would be. It has a very... He wears it on his face quite often in the movie.
Right.
In fact, at the very end of the movie, he uses his own blood to fix his makeup a little bit and put his smile back on his face. And so those were some of the moments that really kind of resonated with me, that kind of reveling in the afterglow of the violence.
I think there was an interesting element of the movie, too, where, you know, he hallucinates that he has a girlfriend in several scenes.
And we're not let in on the fact that it's a hallucination until way later in the movie.
We don't know that he's hallucinating her presence, that basically this is just a woman he had a chance... But yeah, it kind of raises the specter of like what else in this movie didn't really happen, you know?
Right, and it really did answer a question, because I was like, what is he offering this woman? You know what I mean? Like, why would a woman like this ever even consider looking at a dude like him? She was just kind of there in his life as a presence, but not impactful. And it was very easy for them to remove her from that and show us that this was all just a fantasy. It also invites, and that's not the only fantasy he engages in. Beginning of the movie, he fantasizes an entire appearance on the Murray Show.
And a very wholesome one, too.
Oh, a totally wholesome one. He's a member of the audience, and he says, I love you, Murray, and Murray puts the spotlight on him, and he has the opportunity to talk about how much he loves his mom and how he likes to make people laugh, and he gets a big hug from Murray. But it also, I guess, invites speculation as to how much of what we're shown is real.
Right.
Right? Not once, but twice, we've got very explicit, looks into this guy's mind that he can make up these entire narratives. So that ending moment where everything's descended into violence and all the clowns have done his bidding, and is that real?
I think that had to have happened simply because it explained Thomas and Martha Wayne's death.
Sure.
Because, I mean, we know canonically in the Gotham universe that happened. So I think that must have happened. But his big escape scene at the end, where he's walking down the hall with leaving a trail of blood from the woman he's obviously just killed, and he's running around in the asylum, did that really happen? I don't know.
Did any of it? I mean, it kind of raises, for me at least, the specter that much of what we're seeing might just be the hallucinations of a dude that's beaten down by society and not properly medicated and shit.
Right.
So maybe it never happened. Maybe it's all just a figment of his imagination. That big explosive violent scene towards the end where he kills his friend from work. Maybe that never happened. You know what I mean? So any of this, I think, is possibly just a big dream in the head of a very sick person. I guess it depends on... I mean, because he would want to see Wayne killed.
Well, I think the fact that Thomas and Martha Wayne canonically died in pretty much that exact fashion, minus the dude in the clown mask, in so many different iterations of this, you know, cinematic world, means that I think that they're at least lends credibility to that actually happening. And if the riots actually happened, that means the Murray Show probably actually happened.
Right. But you have to admit that these are all things that he would have wanted in his dream of dreams.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He wanted that revenge against Murray. He wanted people to kind of tear the city apart in protest of the way that he was treated. He wanted Thomas and Martha Wayne dead for, you know, the slight that he perceived that they had done to him, and wouldn't have harmed little Bruce Wayne. You know what I mean? So I don't think it's as cut and dried as all of that.
Right.
All of these things that you earlier on in this explain away by happenstance... When we're shown a guy that can fully hallucinate experiences that obviously never happened, how much of this can we trust is real?
I mean,
when everything that happens is a fulfillment of his ultimate fantasy.
Right. And as if this movie isn't already complicated enough, you introduce the element of, like, what was real and what wasn't. Was any of it real? You know?
Right.
Just makes the movie even more fucking complicated and even more of an... this movie, It would love... I mean, it's a movie you could sit there and analyze for fucking forever. And I'm sure people will. There's going to be so many videos about this. There's going to be so many essays written about this. This is going to be a film that invites years and years and years of people contemplating it and coming up with different theories and coming up with different explanations of their theories and reading different messages and morals and all kinds of shit into it. I mean, this probably won't be the last time I fucking contemplate it. I mean, it definitely won't, but, you know, I mean, like, publicly. I don't know. I just think it was one of the best movies I've seen in theaters in a long time, mostly because I just don't feel like too many movies with this kind of balls are made anymore.
Yeah. I'd say the only theater-going experience that matches it in recent memory for me was when I went and saw The Meg. Dude, that movie was badass. Meg, bro. Giant fucking shark, dude. You don't even know. Have you seen The Meg, bro?
No, I haven't.
Oh, dude, we erase this. Take off that face paint and put a shark hat on. Let's talk about The Meg.
Let's talk about the fucking Meg.
All right. Well, yeah. Thanks for watching, I guess. Bye.